Let's go back to the time period when you served at the old location. And came time when it was obvious that we had to move to the new location. What was your reaction at that time?
Well, my reaction at that time was that I didn't really want to move. Part of it was interesting because my father had been very close to Alex Smith, who was administrator for Queens Hospital. And it was felt at that time that the Queens Hospital would sell that piece of property.
Testing. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Well, my father felt that he could persuade Queens Hospital to sell the property to the Outrigger and Fee. For whatever reason, I don't know, that didn't come about. And when the club did decide to move up here, I actually was not happy with moving away from Waikiki because of the surfing area and things like that. So I went and took my board over to the Ulunil Club next door, along with several others, including George Bronje and a few, and continued to surf down there. And I can remember, I can remember all the meetings that we had. We had meetings that you chaired at that time. We used to have club meetings at the Princess Kailani. And I still wasn't really happy about it. And I thought maybe possibly of resigning from the club. And I remember coming up here, and Bobby Anderson and I walked around through the original foundations of where the men's locker room was and everything like that. And I remember Bobby explaining to me where the lockers were going to be and everything. And I didn't resign, and which I'm really very happy that I didn't. I kept my membership, and as it turned out, we're very much better off here in this area than we would be down in the middle of Waikiki.
Why are we better off being down here?
Well, I remember as being younger on the beach that a lot of times the gals used to get hustled by servicemen and things like that. There was just a lot more action and a lot, and particularly in today's environment, I think there would have been a lot more trouble from with members down there and being on the beach. And in those days, we used to be able to, spend time on the beach at night and not worry about getting beaten up or anything like that. So I think it's where we've moved to. I'm a lot happier having three daughters that they were able to grow up here in this new location rather than down in Waikiki, which I think would have been a little rougher.
It's become a real family club.
Oh, definitely. No question about that. We don't have the beach facilities, really. I mean, the big Waikiki beach. We're not as close to surfing as we were. We used to have the Outrigger beach services. Sally Hale and everybody, all the beach boys were right there at the club.
Tell me a little bit about the beach services now that you mentioned.
Well, I can remember, that's, of course, all the beach boys that were there. Sally Hale was head of it. And I can remember it was a little office. The beach service office was right under the bar. And we used to take all the canoes out, take the tourists out in canoes and everything. And it was fun because I used to go, a lot of times I'd go out with Steamboat or I'd go out with some of the other guys that, a second captain, Turkey Love and guys like that. So it was a lot of fun to be on the beach just like that.
Duke and David?
Yeah. Duke, in my day, Duke wasn't doing it as a profession, though. I mean, it was the Beach Boys, the other Beach Boys were really doing it, to make money. Duke had already graduated, I think, into the sheriff's job or something like that.
I remember David, so he and I used to go and canoe together, single canoe together.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they always, all the brothers were very you know, very active down there. And I remember one of the one time on first break waves, I got a lesson from Sarge when I wasn't sliding left fast enough, and he was sliding left fast, and he came right across my board. And fortunately, they didn't have skegs then, so it didn't chew my board up, but it caught me right across the ankles.
Who is this?
Sarge Kanamoku.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Sarge wasn't. He'd tell you to get out of the way, and then he'd just keep on coming.
That'd be pretty good. Can you remember some of the characters that figured prominently in your life at the club?
Well, I think I can remember some of the characters, certainly, that were on the beach. Steamboat, Big Boat, and Turkey, and Panama, and Chick, and Curly, and, Kalakaua was on the beach for a while.
These were part of the Beach Boys service.
Yeah, those were part of the Beach Boys service and Beach Boys. Panama never worked for the Beach Service. He was always at the Moana.
What was the objective of the service, Beach Boys service? What was their function?
Well, it was primarily to take tourists out in canoeing and surfing lessons and things. I mean, they were. Chick was at the Royal in Panama, and Jimmy Hakaoli were at the Moana. And Beach Boys service was designed to take tourists out in canoes and give them surfing lessons. And then, of course, you talk about some of the characters. Excuse me. Richard and Clara in the snack bar. And Pops, the night watchman Pat Wyman used to drive out of his mind, and Eva and Malia at the front desk, Charlie Hee, all people that worked for the club.
How about some of any particular, remember the managers of the club?
Oh, well, I think one of the great managers that I remember was Fred Mosier. In my opinion, Freddie turned the club around from the standpoint of getting people back, members back to the club. He became interested in the younger members of the club. We used to go canoeing with him. I think, in my opinion, turned the food service around, the service and the quality of the food around, so that members enjoyed coming back to the club. I think there was some concern from the board that he was his ratio of cost to sales in the food part of it was a little off, but I credit him with getting people back to the club, members back to the club, and starting to use the club again. Jake Tudor also was at the club. Gay Harris was a club member, was a club manager at one time, too. Jake Tudor was there when I first joined.
What were your impressions of Jake? I have some vivid recollections. I wonder if they agree.
It's interesting. I don't really have a lot of vivid recollections of Jake as a manager. I don't know, maybe I wasn't getting in trouble, or maybe I wasn't running around quite as much at the club as I did later, but... I never really bounced off of Jake too much, and I know a lot of people did.
Well, I mention him because I always remember the wishing well. Do you remember the wishing well?
No.
He put that right on just adjacent to the volleyball courts. He put this well, and he threw coins in it like a...
Well, was that a little shallow well or something?
Yeah.
Well, I remember that. Yeah.
He sung around the office with three coins in the fountain.
I do remember that.
I want to touch on one point, which I think was very, you were very active in, and I'd like your recollections on it. I know that you had, during your presidency, you worked very hard with the Elks Club to try to resolve the future of the club. Can you just give me a briefing on your participation?
Well, the that's been an ongoing thing, I think, long before I was president. But yeah, we set up a lot of meetings with the members of the Elks Club, particularly the older members of the Elks Club, who I think you probably in the negotiations, the real original negotiations, had something to do with some of the members like Ray Medley and some of those guys. We instituted some like cocktail parties over here where we were supposed to come over. We invited them over here, their board of trustees, and then they would invite us over there, and we were trying to put together kind of common ground and friendships so that we could work toward being able to acquire this property in fee. And that still is going on. This is, 25 years later, and I don't know whether I don't think we've gotten any closer to it than we were 25 years ago. They've resisted, I think, our overtures. We've tried a lot of different things. I know one of the things in the parking structure that we approached them, and I had talked to some of them about the possibility of building a joint parking structure that they could also use as well as us. We could build it on, we were talking about building it on the back of their parking lot. We would put the money up and they would put the land up. They didn't go for that. And I think the reason for that is that they were thinking about the building a high rise on the back of their parking lot, which I think they probably still are thinking about. But I don't think that's a possibility. I don't know why they're not a little more realistic about it than that. But the continuing dialogue that we've had with them on this, even to the extent in 1986, when I was, 1987 maybe, or maybe even it was after that, I actually, unbeknownst to the board of the Outrigger, I made a offer to the Elks Club of $6.5 million for this piece of property, with the understanding that I'd have to get board approval. But it was, and it was interesting because that offer went as far as about three of the old timers. Never got to the Board of Trustees, never got to the Exalted Ruler, never got to anything, because the old-timers were just against us even talking about it. And then in a discussion where we acknowledged the fact that when we made this lease with the Elks Club, that it was actually a good lease for them. They needed the money, and they got the money that they needed, and it was a good lease. Today, it is a very good lease for us. And it will continue to be a very good lease for us for an awful lot of years. And acknowledging that that was the case, I suggested that maybe the Outrigger should buy the Elks Club out entirely, and then we would turn around and lease them back their portion on the same basis that they lease us our portion. Well, they didn't like that idea either. So it's just, I don't think it's a practical viewpoint on their part. They're not looking at it from an economic standpoint. They're looking at it from a jealous, I think, old-time standpoint. And I don't think anything's ever going to happen. This is my personal opinion. I don't think anything's going to happen until we don't have the old-timers around that are bitter about the lease, and personally, they think that we took them, and we definitely have a very favorable lease that you were involved in working out, and I think they don't realize that I think that when our renegotiation comes up, that they aren't going to absolutely put us out of business, which I think they are really looking for. They think that some Japanese buyer is going to come in and offer them $350 million for this piece of property, and they're going to base our rent on that, and that isn't going to happen.
You raised an interesting point. You refer to they. And I think you identify they as being the old-timers that you have to say have to go by the wayside, give way to a new element. Now, assuming that, what is going to be the best way to approach that new element?
Well, I think the old-timers are emotional about our lease and about us being here. And I think a younger, newer element will be more practical, economically practical, in looking at it. And I think that if they realize that they are not going to base our 5% lease rental on $300 or $350 million, one, that number two, and I've been told this by several of them on the Board of Trustees over there, that they feel that the lease negotiation with us is a lever that they can use to get us to support them getting the permission to put a high-rise on the back of their parking lot. And I, at that time, told them that I thought they were entirely wrong. I don't think that, I said I didn't think that we had the influence that they are thinking we have, that we're not in a position to make that kind of judgment about high rise or get the necessary help them get the necessary permits and things. And I think that they are trying in the backs of their minds, I think they're trying to use the renegotiation as a lever for us to support them on that. And I think that when they realize that the renegotiation, that we're probably going to be better off not buying the property and just continuing on the lease for the next 50 years, that they may get a different outlook on it, and particularly the younger, more development-oriented members that they may have, more practical, economically practical members that they may have. I think that may change that philosophy over there. But as long as the old-time members are still there, I was told, to be honest with you, I was told by one of the chairman of the board, who I won't name, but he and I had a meeting at a McDonald's restaurant on King Street where nobody would see us. And he told me that he said the next time the outrigger makes an offer, it has to make it to the board of directors, because these guys, these old timers, they just swallow it and nobody ever sees it. And those our offers, several of them have never ever gotten to the board of directors, so therefore it's never been brought to the membership.
You raised some very interesting points. One point which I think has complicated the whole procedure, the whole issue, is that zoning probably precludes the construction and the substantial high-rise on the back of their property, which I think emphasizes the need to get the message to their membership. From what you say, I gather that really the membership at large has never really had an opportunity to express their opinion.
Well, I think that's part of it. excuse me. I think that the old-timers have really run that club over there. And even some of the younger ones, and one of them who was selected that I was hoping would make a difference, said that he really got elected on the basis that he kind of promised that they were going to break the lease. And that hasn't happened. And when I was told that, I told him, I said, well, be our guest, because we don't think he can. And they never pursued it. And, you know, let's face it, they couldn't do it anyway.
I don't think so. I pretty much went through that whole procedure,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
But
you're right. I think the membership, I don't think it really ever gets a real clear picture of this thing. I think it's the board of directors, and particularly the old members who are not on the board but are very vocal over there and have been in all of the positions of strength have really kept it from the membership. And I know another thing also that's kind of interesting is that they have always been concerned that Outrigger members would join the ELS Club and then be able to swing a vote over there. And I know that we do have some members that are their members over there, but I think very few. But it's an interesting thing that's something that's worried them for quite a while.
Well, they're in a very critical situation right now, and maybe the time is ripe for something drastic to happen, or something either on our part or their part. But it's you certainly covered the waterfront pretty well there.
Well, you know, it was one instance when we offered them this an amount of money, and it wasn't the time that I just offhand offered them 6.5 million, but it was the time when we did offer them money somewhere in that neighborhood. We also pointed out that if they accrued that money till the end of our lease, they would have almost $1 billion. And, you know, they could buy the island with that practically, you know. But even so, if we gave them $4 or $5 or $6 million or whatever, you know, the thinking would be, and I don't know what it would be, they could do an awful lot with that over there and make a club, a magnificent club, or they could go somewhere else and buy a piece of property and make a magnificent club. And that's one of the things that I said when I offered to buy them out. I said, well, you know, you can do that. You can, with that kind of money, you can go and get every facility that you ever wanted and everything. And the reply was, oh, no, we have some members that like to have a drink and look at the water. So I said, well, that's an expensive drink if you look at it from that standpoint. But I think that something one of these days is going to happen. But by then, it may be better for us not to purchase it.
You're right. Well, it's a good recap of what the situation is. I guess we could go on for a long time discussing
it. It's been going on for a long time. I guess we could go on about as long as it has been.
And let's get back to the club now. I was wondering if there is... I did want to talk about Walter. He was president in 94, wasn't he? 1994?
Was it 1994?
Yeah.
1994? Okay.
That's only 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Four years ago.
Yeah. You don't worry about it, neither.
Yeah, I thought he did an outstanding job.
Well, he was a president. He was president at a time that there were some major changes in here. In the club. He also, I think, had an interesting thing happen, and that was that his aunt, Mary Philpotts McGrath, was also on the board. And
she's the first woman president.
Yeah, she's the first woman president. So it's kind of an interesting thing that Walter Mack, Walter Gill, and Mary Philpotts are all related, all president. But, excuse me. Walt had Mary's expertise, and I think one of the things that came out of that that I really credit Mary for, but it happened during Walt's term, and that was the new dining room facility, and I think that has turned out just magnificent. I think that's really one of the most beautiful parts of this club, and how it, I think, has generated a lot more business.
Just a little... the madness on my part to get this into the record, because usually we don't interview anybody until they're a long ways into the membership, the senior members in the 60s or 70s and so on. But this has been such, I think, an important such period in the club's history that I did want to comment on that. How did Walter come to... Tell me a little bit about Walter. I mean, he's an outstanding athlete. And how he came to be president, and what influence he might have had.
Well, Walt, it's interesting because I've always wanted our kids to be part of the club, so I've gotten them in as soon as they were able to get in. And I taught Walt to surf. Actually, I taught him to surf out of Kahi Point, where we had our beach place out at Eva. But I really surfed with him more right here at the Outrigger. And I remember he was 8 years old. And he and I used to go surfing. We'd go out there when it was still dark, before dawn, and sit on our boards and at Old Man's, and when there were any waves, catch them, obviously. But it was a great time for me because he's my only son. And it was fun just being out there and being able to talk to him and everything as an eight-year-old. And then I was able to get him into some of the summer programs. Actually, he's supposed to be 10 years old, but I was able to get him into a couple of summer programs. So he surfed and canoed and everything here, and then was growing up into the club. And so he's been, playing volleyball and surfing and paddling all his life. And the thing that I think probably is most gratifying, or one of the most gratifying things to me, is that I always wanted him to understand Koa, and particularly Koa canoes, and because I had grown up with Duke's canoes, and I used to paddle those, and particularly the club's racing canoes and things. And there's just a special feeling about those canoes as far as I was concerned, and I wanted him to be able to get that feeling. And so I encouraged him to be around the canoes and the Koa and learn how to rig them and learn how to take care of them. He went far further than I ever thought he would. Became very involved in actually working on the canoes, preparing them for racing, rigging them and changing a little bit of the design, sometimes of the seats and things like that. But he became very much more involved in it than I ever thought he would. And so he not only grew up in the club, but he grew up working with the canoes, and particularly with Koa canoes and things. And the fact that he happens to be built of fiberglass canoes is kind of an extension of that. But I was really happy that he was so involved in the club and took such an interest in the club that when they were, we were actually looking for some younger people to get involved in the board. Because it's, you need the new blood and the enthusiasm and the energies, and that he did, even at a time that wasn't the easiest time for him from a business standpoint, he did get on the board. And I was obviously very, very delighted that he was successful on the board and also became president. So I think he's a product. If he's a good example, then he's a product of a youngster growing up in the club and having a special feeling for the club, and obviously a desire to see it the very best. And he's got a great attitude from the standpoint that I think that just one time after a Molokai race, which they had won the year before and then came in second the last year, and I think it was when the Tahitians won. And I talked to him right on the beach right after the race. After 4 or 5 hours of being out there in the Molokai Channel, it's kind of grueling. And I said, "Gee, I'm really sorry about the fact that you guys didn't win it." And he said, "Dad, the best thing that happened is somebody else won it, because it becomes a truly an international contest. Then if we had won it every single year, it wouldn't ever." Mm-hmm. Develop into something very special. And I think that kind of attitude of his has always been one of his strong suits. And so he is not only for himself, but he's always been for everybody else. And I think that kind of helped him as a director and as a president, probably.
You can look forward to the day where maybe you'll have a grandson.
Well, that's something that I can look forward to. I know that Alice is looking forward to it. In fact, she's getting very, very impatient because we only have one of our four children married, and she's married to somebody who already has grown children and grandchildren. So she's never going to have any children of her own. So we don't really have any grandchildren, and Alice is getting very, very unhappy about that.
I'll have to get after Walter.
Yeah. Walter and Alyssa are the two candidates in our family right now.
Good. Oh, Rav, this has been most interesting. If you've got anything else that you'd like to add for the record?
Well, I don't know, not particularly from my standpoint, other than to say that I think that I have been very blessed and very fortunate to have been a member of the Outrage Canoe Club. I always told my kids that the greatest thing they had going for them was being able to go to Punahou and have the Outrigger Canoe Club as two great, I felt, great establishments. Dai went to Hawaii School for Girls, which I have to put up on the same shelf as Punahou. They've just had an opportunity that most kids in Honolulu don't have. The Outrigger has been a fabulous club. It's got a great tradition. It's always been looked up to, and it's not because it's a rich Howley club or something, but it's because of the way we've participated. And I just feel very, very honored that I have had an opportunity to be a member of the club. I'm very honored that I was on the board for 12 years. I'm very honored that I was president twice. Those are things that I will always cherish. The only thing that concerns me is that we've lost a lot of members who have been members for 50 years, and I've been a member for 51. So I'm trying to push that envelope as far as I can, and maybe be a member for 75 years. I'd like that very much.
You will.
But I look forward to a lot more times at the Outrigger and a lot more fun.
Well, I think the club has been extremely fortunate to have people like you devote so much time and interest in the club and contribute so much to the club. The whole entire family, particularly your children. I look for much more participation on the part of that Gill family and the future of that club.
Well, I appreciate that. I just want to interject one thing. I think that the Outrigger Canoe Club, not only the fact that it is an outstanding club, it's outstanding because of the participation and the quality of the people that are members of the club. And Ward, you're a perfect example of it. You know, you've been so instrumental in making the club what it is today.
Well, that's just the end of it. That's a whole lot.
Well, I hope I got your name in there.
He did.
I still got your name over here on this
one. All right,
one.
Let's add it for this one. We can add this.
No, I really think that the, I belong to two country clubs, and I can tell you that the way the Outrigger operates, the quality of people that are on committees, and the way the board operates, you don't have any bickering and infighting between members and the board, because the board does their homework. The committees do their homework, they recommend it to the board, and the decisions that the board make, I think for the most part, every member of the Outrigger says, you know, that's really the best for the club. One of the country clubs I belong to, there is so much individualism in the club that it's, what is it, you know, that's not good for me. It doesn't matter whether it's not good for the club. That's not good for me. I don't want that. There's so many unrealistic expectations in some of those clubs that they just don't function well. And I would not want to be involved in being a director or president of a couple of the clubs that I know because of the fact that they just don't function like the Outrigger does. They don't have the expertise and the quality membership that the Outrigger does, and I think that's what really makes the club. It makes it easy to manage it.
You know, this has been probably from my point of view, one of the best interviews I've had. I have been told you shouldn't go over an hour. Do you know, we've been at this a full hour?
Yes, I realize that. It's very easy to talk when you're...
Oh, I couldn't... we're still recording. Rav, thank you very much. Most interesting, and I think one of the best interviews I've had.
Well, Ward, I got to tell you, I probably ducked this interview for a long time because I really didn't think I had much to talk about. And I was concerned that maybe I wouldn't remember a lot of the names that I should have remembered. But you've done your homework, and you know more about me than I probably know about me, particularly involved with the club. So I just want to tell you that I really appreciate you doing it, taking your time to do it.
Pleasure.
I'm honored to have you do it. Senator, just remember, send the checks.
In the mail.
All right, in the mail.
Thank you very much.